able to follow the path by being a monk or by being a layman. After understanding the teaching, not just not knowing anything and just wanting to be a monk. Because even layman can attain arahata, but after attaining arahata, that person cannot live worldly life anymore or family life anymore. So the difference between, what is the main difference between monk's life and lay's life? Not the yellow robe, not only all the robes. There must be one main thing, which is very important. Who doesn't know cannot be a real monk.
Okay.
Can anyone who doesn't have any vacation be a monk or not a monk? No. So it's not vacation. Vacation.
No attachment.
To what?
10%.
Family. Circle of family and friends.
Do monks not see their family at all?
They should not consider them as their family anymore.
Do they see them at all during that?
They could see them, but they shouldn't have attachment to them as before.
But they seem to be able to disrobe perhaps more easily than our.
For those who know that they couldn't follow anymore, it's better for them to disrobe. Because one should be a pure monk. If one cannot follow the rule or one cannot live one's life.
Do they have a novitiate the way ours do, a sort of 3-year novicehood before being what we call professed into the Lama?
There are some rules
about, child time.
About one should learn before being a monk. But you see that if one still clings to one's family, relatives and friends, one is not real monk.
If you make such a high criteria about being a monk, one should have no attachments whatsoever.
Not completely, but one understand one's accumulation or one's tendency that one can live without clinging. Not just thinking about what my children are doing or things like that.
Yeah, so in other words, only people who are fairly highly appreciative of themselves would become monks in the first place. They're appreciative of people who only met people who are appreciative of their tendencies towards clinging and aware of awareness would become monks in the first
place.
And
they know that they prefer the kind of life.
Yeah. And who only people whose tendencies towards worldly behaviour, if we can call it that, are already naturally dropping off and become monks.
Would become monks or should become monks?
Would become monks because that would be
many
a
people
natural
become,
tendency.
But many people become monks in Buddhist countries for many different reasons.
Sure.
And what Konstantin is saying is if someone is interested in becoming a monk or is a monk, is that they should really question and consider the real reason for leading that way of life is, because many people become a monk for very different reasons.
Yeah, I've already passed that point,
It's not a matter of will of those that will, but those why they should, real reason, not the reason it's happening.
Okay.
But can't you still keep your family? You're still not at all.
Yeah.
So I think with us you can be a nun, which is the only thing I know about. And you can still have Christmas cards, perhaps, from your family, and once a year see your family, and still be an excellent nun.
This is different.
I'm interested to know the difference. I mean, the vocation, as Barbara said to me, I thought was the great thing, that sort of a calling to lead this life.
One can sit among people without a passion, but one can be alone with a passion. It depends on one's accumulation at that moment. So in order to become a monk, one realizes that one has less clinging to family, relatives and friends, and one sees the value of living alone in order to develop right understanding. It has to be one's own nature so that one can develop more understanding. It's not like forcing or suppressing.
Aren't they transferring their attachments from their family, say, to their religion or whatever? It's a transference. I mean, your family are always your family, even though you only see them a tiny bit.
But what about one's attachment? It can become less.
I think we have to be attached to some. I probably am on the wrong thing, and I'm sorry, I'm going to take this terribly ashamed. Everybody's attached to something.
So,
everyone
should not become a monk if one still has attachment in that way.
So could you?
No, you carry on so much careful
attention. Could you then look around the room and see which people here you think have the right emotional predisposition to become a monk?
Can you tell for the others or for yourself only?
I'm learning it myself, but you might know the science of somebody who has a certain... What I'm getting, are people born with a certain genetic disposition to become a monk?
We don't know. Nobody knows. We can know ourselves.
But it's not only monks. I mean, other people require... You know, with Buddhist yoga, it requires this detachment. It's not only monks.
By understanding. By developing understanding. What about being a monk without any understanding, or being a layman with more and more understanding?
Do you become a monk for the purely selfish reason of wanting to get rid of attachment? But at some point you do get rid of attachment, and then what you're doing
is developing right understanding.
But you still do it for the wrong motive, or for a motive, which is a selfish motive. You want to have a happier life. I mean, you're thinking about yourself when you become a monk.
What do you mean by
Well, I think you and the fact that you want to get rid of attachment means that you're thinking about yourself and you're worrying about yourself because you're unhappy, because you're attached to things. That's the quickest way to become happy.
Can you get rid of the other's attachment, or can you get rid of your own attachment? And help the other to get rid of their attachment as well.
When you've got rid of your own,
So, it's a kind of helping the other to get rid of attachment by getting rid of one's own attachment first.
Constantine, why should one not have any attachment?
Is attachment good?
I think it's yes. I can't see that attachment is wrong.
Well, I think Shirley's the thing is that it's like eating possessions. There's no harm in having possessions. Mm-hmm. It's whether one's attached to the possessions. And one must be prepared that they might be taken away from at any minute. And that is really what attachment is. It's not clinging to anything. It's not any people. It's everything. Surely. Tables, chairs, whatever, you know.
There are many degrees of attachment. When it's not so strong, one doesn't see its danger yet. Yeah? But when it's very strong, one will see its danger. But by seeing even just a little or slight danger of attachment, one is able to get it. But
you see, you have to have one of those, and you can be compassionate when you're attached.
I'm attached. I like my things.
Yes, as it's not so strong enough, it's not so dangerous, so you cannot see that it's dangerous. But when it's so strong, one can see how dangerous it is. Stealing is conditioned by attention.
So I can see that attachment is wrong, but I can't see why all attachment is wrong. Because I think everybody needs something or somebody. Or
We're not attached to ideas, perhaps. Is that wrong?
Attachment is dangerous, but one may not see it dangerous. Can you say that? But it's not strong enough. But it's not so strong, attachment. It's all right for everyone who does not commit any ill deed yet. But everyone agrees that when anyone does something bad, committing ill deed, one knows that it's strong, attachment. Like stealing.
That's right.
If there is less attachment, there is no fear.
It's probably on whether the ultimate attachment, whether the attachment keeps one from the ultimate reality. If a thing is not being completed, then that
My own feeling is that we are bound to have unique relationships. We relate differently to different people. And one can be close, in a very close relationship with people or with things like the teaching of the Buddha. We have a very close relationship with it if we are trying to pursue the Eightfold Path. I think it is possible to have many different kinds of relationships, some may be very close, without necessarily being attached.
It seems like thinking that there is no attachment, like if the attachment at the moment of looking at this table, can we find out whether there is attachment or no attachment at all?
I think at this moment it's very difficult to find out.
That's why one lives with attachment, that one cannot recognize it as attachment. Because we're so used to it.
Yeah, that's true. That's true, but attachment is bound to be there until we reach enlightenment.
Does it mean something different, do you think? You and Ned Johnson, does attachment mean something different to constitute from me? I think it maybe does. I mean, to me, attachment doesn't mean on stealing or whatnot. It just means enjoying, I'm afraid.
Things I've got. But if they're all staying in time, it would be... It's terrible, actually. It's a word, yeah. But what about attachment? I mean, we're all attached to a lot of different ideas now. You know, we're either Nazis or IRA or we're Buddhists. You know, does that sort of attachment? I mean, that's another attachment, isn't it?
Yeah.
So what do you think about that?
I think... these things we're attached to give us some kind of identity. Like if we're attached to the idea of being a Buddhist, can they give us some kind of self-conception? And, or maybe a kind of profession we pursue? Maybe
the kind of
person? Yes. Yeah, but are these things merely identity? Because they're rather vulnerable, aren't they?
And I think Buddhism is saying we shouldn't have an identity.
That's right. In a way, I think so. Because if we imagine we're a middle class sort of nurse, and we're a Buddhist, say, just for three things. I mean, those can be pretty vulnerable. In this, we can lose our job, or we can get sick, or we suddenly decide we're not a Buddhist, and so is that really healthy to have that conception about oneself?
I think it is healthy for the simple reason that we are finite. We live for a certain amount of time, and there's a certain limited number of things we can do. And therefore it's important to make certain decisions on the basis of that very limited life which we have to live. I choose to be interested in Buddhism because I haven't got the time to learn about all other religions.
That's true.
It's a
working relationship to a sort of... hypothesis which is sort of in the stage of fermentation, in the stage of progression. But it's how you have that self-conception which is important. Most people's self-conception is rather, it's not an open one, it's a closed one. You know, this is it. I mean, maybe your hypothesis is rather a working one, which is more healthy, I imagine.
My concept of identity is perfectly in tune with a Nietzsche took another impermanence, unsatisfactoriness, no soul, because it's precisely because it's a working hypothesis, could break down at any time. And yet it is valid. We can't live without it, I think.
If there is no soul, can there be, I believe in this or that?
Yeah, there can. There is belief in this.
But if there is no thinking, can there be, I think?
Not if there's no thinking, no. So at the moment of thinking, there can be, I think.
But if there is no self or no I, how can there be I? Believe in this or that?
There is I in the conventional sense that I go about my daily tasks. If you try to find some ultimate I behind that, then obviously you're lost. I mean, as I say, this identity is a working hypothesis, it's not an ultimate reality. Yet, nevertheless, it is important.
Mm. because you've got, you know, your expectations, you're a nurse, you've got to know that you're a nurse because you've got to go to work the next day, right? And if you forget, then regard yourself as a nurse in relation to work, the work you do, you won't go to work, you see. So there's a kind of, you see, as an art, and you can regard it as an artificial thing, but you don't, you know, you aren't stamped with that ultimate sort of thing. You don't define yourself and see yourself only in relationships to that professional occupation.
So having an identity, is that coming hand all day? It's something you use to go about
your
daily business, but
I don't think it is.
Well, obviously, there's degrees and degrees of that. I can't say I've got the older one out.
But I think it's really important to be very honest with ourselves, because we might hear that attachment isn't helpful in life, or that to have the wrong idea of self isn't helpful. But actually, in our daily life, because we are beginners in our practice or our understanding, of course there is attachment all day long, whether we're here or there, or whether we live in a big house or a small house, or in the country or the city, and we cling to a wrong idea of self. We take things for being ourselves all day long anyway, even if we've heard in theory that this isn't right. And I think it's better to begin to know and be honest about the attachment and the wrong ideas.
Yeah.
And rather than thinking, oh, I mustn't have attachment, I must give away all my possessions, I must lead a life as a Samar, I must go here, I must do this.
So
it's
saying,
better to continue living our life naturally and to develop more understanding gradually, because it's not the outward appearances that are important. Different people lead different lifestyles and are attached to different objects, but it's not how many antiques or how big the house is, or whether we're married or single or here or there, that's the criterion of the attachment. Because every time we open our eyes or hear, there's attachment immediately anyway, and who can stop it or control it just because we want to or we've heard that it's bad? It's better just to see the value of understanding and think how our life is, and that's the way that the practice is natural.
We haven't really discussed practice yet.
I think we've been discussing it a lot. Because people think that in order to practice any understanding, it means they must have to go somewhere else, or must be in a dark room, or must be sitting in a particular position, or must be concentrating on a special object. We were talking earlier this morning about people who have some ideas, unless everything's very difficult and they're feeling very unhappy, that somehow they cannot be practiced. But practice doesn't mean that one has to go around and be unhappy, or one has to...
No, but you don't have any sort of discipline, I think, say for 10 minutes in the morning or anything like that.
I think what is important is the resolution in one's life, to understand one's life better. So right now we're not sitting in a quiet room or in a different place. We're here, and there are different realities being experienced.
But you must have a few moments in the morning, say, out of our lives.
You do have a few quiet moments in the morning, or not?
Sometimes a few quiet moments, and sometimes a few noisy moments. But what is important is not how noisy or how quiet it is, but what is experienced at this moment is experienced anyway. So we might think, oh, it would be better if we were in a quiet room on our own, not with all these people, or if we were in the city, not the country. But it's better to... But we have no choice. This is where we are at this moment. And if there is seeing and hearing at this moment, that's our life. It's only at this very moment. This morning is gone, never to...
There's
being
aware at this moment, maybe.
Because what other moment can there be awareness? Because this morning's is gone. We can plan tomorrow's quiet, sitting on our own, but who knows what will happen tomorrow. But at this
minute now, you can give the right answer. Whatever. Do you have a few quiet moments in the morning?
Sometimes.
I mean, often I just straight answer.
But are you saying you should be aware only of the present? Actually, if you're trying to understand your own life, you're actually trying to understand the past and your past.
I think if there's more understanding of this moment, there can be more understanding that if there hadn't been past moments, there wouldn't be this moment.
Yeah.
So just as now we're talking, considering, understanding our lives a little better, and that can be a condition that in other moments we'll be more considering, more discussing. Mm-hmm. if there hadn't been some considering of life in the past, we probably wouldn't be interested to be here now.
Right. Yes.
So we can see that just as what happens now is a result of what has happened before, and what happens now will cause what happens
next.
Afterwards.
Yes. Yeah.
Isn't the idea of practice very closely related to a path? So choosing to live in a certain way.
In what way?
Well, for example, choosing the Buddhist teaching as one's guide to living, or choosing some particular Buddhist practice like meditation, or choosing some Christian path, or
I don't think we necessarily have to use a particular word or label or say right now it's going to be this path or this path, but if we see the value of understanding life better at this moment, and we see the value of understanding better what it is, what is life at this moment,
Yeah. Then
that's a way that more understanding can develop, whatever we call it, whether we say it's this or this or this or this. Because it's not just the label that's important. Many people say they're following the Buddhist path, but what does it mean? There's no beginning to understand that this moment
appears
because of certain conditions. That
it's at this moment that the path must always begin. The path has to always be
at this moment, so there always has to be another beginning of the path.
But at the same time, the path involves certain conceptions, certain ideas of how one should live. And different conceptions may be quite compatible with the path, but different people choose different ways of interpreting it. And they realize their interpretations are not the important thing. Nevertheless, they work out these interpretations, or they do these particular practices, whether it's going to church or putting flowers around a Buddha statue. Or
so it depends on what the aim or the goal of one's practice or one's life is.
Yeah.
If one's aim is to develop a lot of concentration,
Yeah. One
can follow a concentration practice and have more and more concentration. If one's aim is to always be very kind to one's neighbour, one can always make a lot of effort. If one's aim is to develop more understanding of one's life.
Oh, but that's not a separate thing. One has got to have some particular path. One may be an intellectual type, one may be an emotional type, one may be a very religious type. All these things are quite natural, according to our accumulations. But the understanding has got to be very closely bound up with our particular path. The understanding is the whole origin and basis of the path, if you like. Nevertheless, the path has another aspect which is particular to ourselves.
So that's why we were saying before that we all have, everyone here has different tendencies, different interests, different objects of attachment, different ways of life, different jobs, different families.
Mm.
So we can begin to see that actually the Buddhist teachings can apply to us all, can help us all to accept our different tendencies, our different interests, our different lifestyles, and begin to understand the different realities better, whatever that lifestyle. So it's not a matter of having to change the lifestyle, having to give up the family if we have family, having to give up the antiques if we like antiques, having to change our clothes if we are lay people.
But we're saying only that at some point, sometimes one does have to give up one's family.
If one wants to become a monk, if it's really one's natural tendency to lead a monk's life, in which case one should naturally.
And maybe in other cases also one has to deliberately change one's lifestyle for different reasons. For example, let's say someone brought up in the Hitler Youth, for example. Someone brought up in the Hitler Youth in the 1930s. He's brought up to a certain lifestyle and he recognises that this is wrong, and he has to decide to adopt some other lifestyle. I mean, there must be many different cases in which people, for one reason or another, decide to change their lifestyle.
And their understanding changes.
Yeah.
There's no need for any conscious effort to change.
I think there is, because one can't simply cast away one's conditioning. One may be still very caught up in that conditioning, and yet still recognise it to be wrong. There can be a real conflict.
Mm-hmm. As you said, like someone brought up, realises that it's wrong.
Yeah, and yet there's still great difficulty. Let's take someone like Albert Speer, for example. He had a lot of difficulty. But he did finally recognise at the end that the whole thing was a
horrible mistake. But he had to write a book to sort out his problems and try to get the conditioning behind him. I mean, it can be a very difficult thing. One can recognize quite clearly that it's wrong. And yet, actually to put it aside and choose something else can still be a very difficult thing. It's not just a simple matter of sort of just casting it aside.
For the lying ones that we had the discussion, when the MI5 thing was all the topic of the spies, you just never tell a lie. And well, we said if Sarah had Kutsuchin and Kun Grandpa staying here, the Nazis came to the door saying, are they here? Would you say yes or no? I mean, it's a big question, all this lying. Well, it is, it's topical.
I think we can say it's good to follow the precepts and this, but if we're not such, if we are such beginners, even though we have all these ideas about what's right and wrong, we can't say what would happen in a certain situation. So, if
starting
in your example, who knows what we might say at that time.
Does your question assume that there's only two answers, either yes or no?
Well, it came about sort of 3 or 4 weeks ago. There was all this sort of spy business that was in the English newspapers. And truth. And so I was saying truth is the most important thing. And our argument was no, loyalty to friends can become more important than truth.
But in the situation,
what is truth? What is truth? Yeah, then what?
But I do vaguely remember reading a lot of Zen Buddhist books. Is that quite different? There were certainly practices there like that. I mean, even if you just contemplate the flower, but the dual form Buddha doesn't have any of those sort of practices, or a certain way of drawing back around with fire and anger.
Well, I think if one is interested in contemplating a flower, would one should know what for. If one enjoys looking or thinking about flowers, like my mother or Kunsu Chin do, that's fine. Just because one knows one just enjoys it and that's all. If one's contemplating a flower because one thinks that by contemplating a flower enough one will become enlightened, one should question how or why. You know, why does contemplating a flower lead to an enlightenment? How does it help one to understand anything about one's life? So,
I read some Zen Buddhism books, and according to the understanding I had, there was a lot of wrong practice involved. As you say, you're making it or thinking of a situation in order to become enlightened, like shooting arrows or bad.
No, I'm sure that's not true. It's the understanding through which you become enlightened, and the understanding through which you learn to shoot the arrow.
I mean, certainly, but I've read some Zen Buddhism books, and there's no mention about developing awareness of reality which appears now through six doorways. And the Buddha always talked about developing awareness now through six doorways. I mean, can there be a variation on reality now? Reality now is real, seeing is real, it has conditions through which it arises. If you have a variation on that, then
it's not a variation, it's a matter of talking about it a different way. Can you shoot an arrow accurately without being aware through six doorways?
It's the desire, what motivates the desire to shoot an arrow?
I think it is, yes.
Then it's clinging, it's not the right path. It's just awareness now of any reality. It's just a lane to begin if you want to shoot an arrow. One is postponing the development of awareness until one shoots the arrow. But there can be awareness now of realities.
How do you know you have awareness now?
When there is awareness.
But how do you recognize that awareness?
When it arises, it performs its function of being aware of a reality. Then one knows.
So well, it just so happens that somebody who is dedicated his life to shooting an arrow in the right way knows that he is aware when he shoots the arrow in the right way.
Certainly, there can be awareness in daily life, whatever you're doing. Yeah. But you don't have to shoot arrows in order to be aware of a reality. But in your daily life, you can be building model aeroplanes or flying, and there can be awareness of any reality which appears. But one doesn't have to make a situation in order to develop.
The thing is, we can't live without making situations. Some people choose to become doctors, some artists some choose to shoot arrows, and the important thing is to develop awareness in what you're doing.
Certainly.
So that's the whole basis of Zen. Yeah. And they develop what they're doing to a very, very high art. And they regard that art as a demonstration of awareness.
But do they know at that moment of choosing that it's not self who's choosing? It's only a conditioned moment.
I don't think they regard choosing as important.
Any moment, there must be more understanding, a clearer understanding of the reality which is not self, as different mentality.
Really, any situation, it's just realities arising and falling away. They're all the same. They're